Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on a Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We are here in beautiful downtown Ames, community radio, the heart of Iowa. Right here in this station, we are doing this show live without a net. Yes, we are. And this radio station is pretty unique in that community radio is really community radio. It's not owned by anybody except a bunch of people here, and we decide what's on it, and you can too. So come on by and get involved. We're on Douglas Avenue, 410 Douglas, downtown Ames. We are in the building that used to be a dry cleaner. So look for the Ames Pantorium sign. Who thought there was a word named Pantorium?
I never heard of it until
but anyway, it is still there. You can find us under the Ames Pantorium sign. Come on in and say hi.
Yeah, so Lana and I are here to report on all of the sort of food-related, completely local, completely seasonal.
Yeah.
Events, opportunities.
Yeah. Advice, recipes, opinions.
Yeah, we are the Gadabout Towns.
We are. So welcome to our kitchen table. We come to you once a week here on this fine radio station. We are in the midst of summer. We'll talk about summer
Woo-hoo.
Today. Donna, talk about the full moon.
Well, we just had the full moon. It was called the Buck Full Moon, as in apparently in Native American traditions, it's when the bucks start their little horns or something, you know, moving into the rut season, as it were. It is also the blessing full moon.
Mm-hmm.
So the lovely folks out at Reliable Street had a little full moon ceremony, as they are wont to do around town. And it's mostly a gathering of fairly young people. It's quite interesting. I really, really love it. There's music. There's usually some elemental fire involved and, you know, going into sort of ancient rites. And Lana and I were probably the only oldest people there. We're the crone representatives.
And we did our best.
That's right. And the band Witch Tit played.
It did. And they were good. And people had a fine time. Reliable Street is a wonderful... It's an intentional community. People get together intentionally.
It's entertaining. Yeah, you don't live there.
No.
It's the old, what is it, the old grain elevator that's out North Dakota?
North Dakota.
And what's the street you live on?
North Dakota.
Oh, it's near North Dakota and 13th, kind of
right.
North of 13th. It's a huge, very interesting piece of poured concrete, I believe, from the 1950s. So obviously it was no longer serving its original purpose and was bought by Lindsay Neeson and Elliot. What's Elliot's
Thompson.
Name? Thompson, right. And so all kinds of creative things go on out there.
Oh, and they've put in a garden. And I know that they got in their garden a little late, and I was really happy to see how lovely it looked. I thought, oh boy, it's going to be a hot one to start all those plants, but they have a garden. So this little garden outside of the grain elevator now.
Yeah, and eventually there's going to be a coffee shop and a gallery space. They're kind of working on city permits and renovation. Ambitious cultural project here in town, but really, really always lots of fun.
We will keep you posted. Interesting doings on the northwest edge of Ames, Iowa. Oh, what else did you do this weekend, Donna?
Oh, it was a busy Sunday. It was also the Ames Progressive Potluck. The second one, I believe it's now running every other year. It was in the, what's the park over there by the skate park? Brookside Park, right. It was boiling hot, but it was still well attended. Quite a delicious potluck.
Mm.
Yeah. And so now Ames Progressive Alliance has about 3 years under their belt. They are really, really, they're accomplishing a lot. They do social justice issues. They have worked on some multimodal transportation, a lot of bicycle issues. They also... they have an environmental resources and renewable energy committee, which is really working seriously on the Ames solar installation with the city. I'm not sure how that's going to unfold, but I'm really glad they're doing it. And then they also stick their fingers into, they want to know about sustainable economic development, which is really, really marvelous. And, of course, several members of the city council were there. They call themselves, they're into resident empowerment. They're really about local politics, which is, you know, we can all easily get caught up watching what our president is doing and even what our governor is doing. But, you know, where we are the most effective is working with what here, what's in our immediate environment, making sure that the government, that we're participating.
Right.
And that our needs and opinions matter the most here in town. So that's a shout out for the Ames Progressive Alliance and lots of other good folks working on local politics.
Great. So don't ever think that you don't have something to say, because politics really is us. We are the folks, and we have our duty to do it.
Right, and it doesn't have to do some – locally, it's not so much if you're a Democrat or a Republican. It's really, you know, I mean, like the library is not for Democrats or Republicans. It's for everybody. The city council is really makes decisions that affect all of us, and a lot of it is very nonpartisan.
Right. Good. Do you have a place to connect up with?
Oh, right. Their website is all one word here, AmesProgressiveAlliance.org.
Good. We're glad they're here. So today we're going to celebrate the midst of summer here. We're going to talk about garlic harvest and bugs and zucchini. It's coming. Zucchini. To play some oldies music from the malt shop. Doesn't that sound like a good thing? Thinking of those warm summer nights, kind of tooling around at the drive-in and all that kind of thing. And here's a bit of news from the Donalana Kitchen News Desk. Well, this should cool you off a little bit. It's about icebergs. Icebergs, yes it is. In Antarctica, in West Antarctica, there is a place called the Larsen Sea Ice Shelf. And I'm sure it's quite chilly down there now. However, things are changing down there. Big chunks of ice shelf are falling off. And this is a natural process that happens all the time.
And if you think it's at the opposite end of the world, you have to realize that when these temperature changes happen at the poles, it changes the entire global weather patterns, which, of course, affect our temperature ranges here in the Midwest and our rainfall patterns.
So these big,
it's about us. It has a local effect in our global world.
Big things are moving around down there. There is a group called 350.org, and they kind of watch this climate change stuff. And there is a soon-to-be Delaware-sized iceberg. Well, that's huge. That is going to fall off the west of Antarctica and start swimming around and melting, perhaps.
Will it go into the Pacific side or into?
I've never figured that out. What is west as far as Antarctica is concerned? I mean, the whole thing is south. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I don't know where it ends up. But there, the 350.org's climate impact folks sort of are going to take this opportunity to remind us that we have a role to play in this climate change stuff, and they are proposing and getting up a petition to do this, because icebergs are named, and they have to watch them. They want to name this iceberg Exxon New. Like Exxon
K-N-E-W.
New. Yeah, Exxon New. What was going on? Because for years and years, oh, no, Exxon said, no, this isn't happening. And now it's kind of.
There's a parallel here between the tobacco company saying, oh, no, smoking doesn't cause cancer. Yeah.
But anyway. So three cheers for those that are working on that petition. And you can look up 350.org and kind of help them out.
You know, there was
that.
Also another, and I'm going to be vague here because I'm pulling it out of my memory banks, but there was a new study released on the, quote, sixth extinction. We're losing species much more quickly than anticipated, and some of it has to do with, of course, changing changing temperatures and habitats. And oh boy, oh boy, this is a merry-go-round that's spinning faster and faster.
Yes, it is. So think of ice, think of icebergs, and Exxon New, an iceberg called Exxon New. All right. So we're going to look at what's going on in the garden. This past week.
Yes, something back that's more fun, more manageable, a positive note here.
Right. This is the season for at least folks around here to harvest garlic. So we had a big harvest garlic harvest out on our farm, and it was lovely. We have lots of garlic. Tricky to harvest.
Beautiful, beautiful garlic.
Tricky to harvest garlic. It's been dry, so getting all those suckers out of the ground, I tell you, that was kind of hard. But we do have a method. We have a big enough patch that you better get some help because you cannot fork up everyone.
Give us a visual on that patch. How many feet by how many feet?
Oh, it's about 200 feet long.
This is a serious garlic harvest, folks.
And like 150 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
How many heads did you pull?
About 3,000. So, but now that's good. That's good. We appreciate that. But on a season like this last week where it hadn't rained, boy, it was hard to get that out of the ground. But we have learned. We have learned. Now, you can do it mechanically and we can, you know, get the tractor out and all that kind of thing. But you can lose a few that way, too.
Mechanically?
A tractor with kind of a plow thing underneath.
So you just loosen them go along?
You have to be, it's pretty tricky. And for us, I don't drive a tractor that well, so I always lose more than I gain. So we've learned that if we just kind of lay out the garden hose and drizzle some water down each bed so that the...
So kind of give it a little soak.
And then they come up, because it is mulch. Things are mulch. Things are fine. We had a good time harvesting garlic. And thanks to all our volunteers that came out to help us.
Because, so how many people did it take to harvest 3,000 heads of garlic?
Oh, let's see. People came out in waves. I'd say a group of four came, and then a group of six came, and then the next day a couple more came.
So you did it like over 3 days or something?
Yeah.
So, and I went out, of course, at the end of it.
good timing there, Donna.
You know, I wanted to see what it was like. So they've got them all piled in the back of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little wagon of some sort.
It's a hay wagon.
It's very picturesque, the whole thing. really. It's the old wooden wagon piled high with garlic. And then you tie them in bundles of six or
something like that
with twine. Mm-hmm. And then you hang them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the barn.
In a barn. Hang
for
on.
How long?
Okay. Now, I'm going to talk about the difference between cured garlic and uncured garlic. You take garlic out of the ground, and it is delicious. It's wonderful. You can use it any old time. It tastes great. That is uncured garlic. That will last just as long as, well, you probably want to eat it right away. But that won't, if you cut the stem off of it, that will not last for a long time.
Right, like I took a few home.
Yeah,
and
you can eat them.
Chopped them open, and they are juicy.
Yeah, that's uncured.
Softer. Mm-hmm. They don't have the papers around them. Mm-hmm. And I cooked a bunch of them into it was an Indian doll, but I left them whole.
Oh, yum.
They were just beautiful.
Yum. But if you want your garlic to last you through the season, that's why we hang it in the barn, because it does need to dry and form papers on the outside.
It doesn't rot. Right?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And it just works better if it's dried. And usually, depending on the weather,
Everybody's used to it. That's what
that's what you see.
Dried or cured is what you see in the market.
Right. That means the papers are on the outside, and it will last way into winter until you eat it all up, of course. But that's the more stable garlic. That is the cured garlic. So it's not cured, uncured does not mean that it's sick or anything.
The swell garlic and the sick garlic.
No.
So how long do you have to hang it till it's properly cured?
About a month, but it depends on the weather. We kind of time a month, and then, but we can use it all along now. But
Okay. So you have 3,000 heads of garlic, Lana.
Mm.
Tell me what you do in a town the size of Ames with 3,000 heads of garlic.
Oh. Now people are getting more and more interested in garlic.
Oh, thank heavens.
Yes. Farmers Market is a fine market, and we belong to a CSA, Farm to Folk CSA, and people call us every now and then and they say, I want to buy some for winter. I want to buy a couple pounds, and yeah, there we go. So,
how many heads to a pound, sort of?
Oh, it depends. Let's see. Medium-ish, let's say.
And I have to say, Lana's heads are, what do you think? They're 2.5 inches or three? They're big.
There's biggies and there's littlies.
And the cloves, here's the best part. The cloves are large.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite because, you know, if you buy with the teeny, what's the variety that you guys are growing?
The variety that I really like growing, the name of it is Music.
Music, right.
Which is a wonderful name for garlic. And it is a hard German stiff neck or hard neck garlic, and that grows well around here. There's lots of different kinds
of
garlic.
And the cloves are big, so that like if you want a whole clove, whole head of garlic in something, you're going to have like 6 or 8 as opposed to 20 teeny weeny ones that have to have the papers peeled up.
Yeah.
It's my favorite garlic.
Yeah. Garlic is a fun thing, and I've learned to appreciate how it grows. You put it in the ground a year before late in the fall. It winters over underneath mulch. It's one of the first things up in the spring, and here it is midsummer, and that kind of garlic, that variety is ready for us right now.
How we preserve it beyond the, it'll keep kind of through Christmas, uh-huh. Don't you think, basically?
Yeah, it'll keep well through
and then
Christmas.
Then it'll start to get little green hearts in it, which are supposedly bitter. Although, truth be told, I use them and throw it in anyway.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a culinary no-no. But the other thing that I have successfully done is peel them and freeze them whole. That will get me all the way through to the next harvest for anything that's cooked. Or doesn't Joe just split the cloves open and peel, freeze them with the papers on them?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's even easier.
Yeah, there you go.
So I usually buy a bunch from Lana and eat as long as I can. I just stick them in the fridge and keep going and going and going. And then it's best not to wait. I take part of the supply while they're really fresh and luscious, and then I peel and freeze.
Very good.
Or if I'm lazy, don't peel and freeze. Anyway, I get some into the freezer, so we don't have to end up eating some of that nasty Chinese garlic, which is what is mostly available around town in the off season.
Right. There is local food that you can buy, and I'm not the only one that grows garlic. There's lots of good farmers around here that grow lots of good garlic. Taste and compare. Try different kinds and grow some of your own. It's one of the easiest things to put in the ground. It'll come up eventually, and there it is, and you can use it anytime.
For Lana, it's easy.
Well, you need some sunshine, Donna. You and your shady garden.
Does it keep away the ground squirrels and stuff like that?
I don't know anything that eats it.
Except us. Oh, that might be a good thing then.
Yeah. I want to mention that we had a drama going on during garlic harvest. We had garlic harvest, and then we're tying up bundles on our hay wagon, and that was by our little red Morton building, our little shed over there, and
it's not that small. It keeps a tractor in it.
Yeah, it's a tractor shed. Okay, but it was adopted by some barn swallows who were just their little ones were just about ready to fly, and boy, were they ever vicious about telling us that we should not be anywhere near
there? There was some dive bombing.
Oh, who would think? All that energy spent dive bombing us. And Donna was out there. She saw this. And you see all these people kind of
was part
ducking.
Of the picturesque scene with the wagon full of garlic and the swallows dive bombing.
Dive bombing. You know? And they were pretty, pretty tenacious. I wish to report that about a week later, we found that the little ones had fallen out of the nest. And we thought, oh, this is not good. So you're not supposed to touch them. You're not supposed to touch them. And then go back, they're gone. Next day, I see a little one flopping around in the tomato row. Okay, don't touch it. Don't touch it. Because the adults were still there dive bombing me. And about last Friday, we saw much consternation among the whole family there. And although the little ones were not really full size, I saw them kind of practice. And we saw 3 out of 5 babies fly away. Maybe other ones left too, but we did see 3 out of 5 babies and their exhausted parents fly away. So,
well, how did your cat miss all of this?
I've been feeding my cat really well, and it's been sleeping in the greenhouse.
So that protects the babies.
That helps a little bit. Yeah. And I don't think these swallows would have let my cat near them anyway.
Well, so they would have discouraged it anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, you had something to say about cherries.
Oh, yes. We just finished an exuberant cherry season. I must say it's about the best I've ever witnessed. Everybody, the trees all over town, somehow the weather hit it right, and they were beautiful, they were delicious, they were very juicy. And our friend Gio, who is Georgian from the country Georgia, told us of a way they traditionally, because everybody, I tell you, is tired of pitting cherries. It is a what should I say? It's heroic work to pit all those cherries. I mean, and cherries are really, really wonderful. But once you don't buy them in the can and you really have to work with them, they make juice everywhere, which tastes delicious, but it is...
It is everywhere.
Yeah, and it's a good thing it's only once a year because now we have another year to anticipate. But Gio said in Georgia what they do, and you heard this conversation, Lana, so you'll have to explain it, but apparently they cook the cherries down slightly with the pits in them. This is the important part, right?
With a bit of sugar, just a bit.
Uh-huh. And that makes the juice come out. Then they separate off the fruit when it's not terribly compressed and cooked, right?
No.
But they retain the juice, and then they cook it down and concentrate it, because that is one of the things about cherries. Like, I made some cobblers, and I ran into some problems because the fresh cherries are so juicy. It's not like, you know, I looked in the Joy of Cooking, where I always go for my basic recipes, and they just go fruit cobbler, right? So I'm telling you, a peach and a blueberry are not the same as cherries. And the thing about the cherries is the amount of juice, which you don't want to lose because it's so good. That is the point.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this Georgian method. I'm going to try it next year. Oh, Joe said you've got some in the freezer. You may try it this year. Apparently, then they cook the juice down somewhat. Then they put the cherries back in. And then is this canned, basically? Because it's hot. I suppose you could hot pack it. I don't know.
Yeah. It was canned.
But somehow it's preserved because then...
You probably put it in the freezer, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's what Lana and I would do. Anyway, the idea is it's a dessert that you eat... kind of like you do olives and get rid of the pit as you go along.
Yeah, this idea of partially cooking, partially reducing. Good mm-hmm. idea.
Right, and because the pit actually does add some flavor to it. I know, and I did put some cherries up in brandy, and you leave the pit in also because that contributes to the flavoring and aging process.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this idea of making everyone spit their pits out at the end of the meal. So way to go for the Georgians.
Good. You're listening to KHOI. This is 89.1 FM Community Radio. And this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, which is tasty radio for the heart of Iowa.
Bye-bye, my love, goodbye. There goes my baby with someone new. She sure looks happy, I sure am blue. She was my baby till he stepped in. Goodbye to romance that might have been. I think I'm gonna cry. Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, sweet caress. Hello, emptiness. I feel like I could die. Bye-bye, my love, goodbye. I'm through with romance. I'm through with love. I'm through with counting the stars above. And here's the reason that I'm so free. My loving baby is through with me.
Summer. Donna, are you from the era of driving around, listening to this great music and going to the drive-in or going to the malt shop?
Well, it's just it's before drive.
Yeah.
Right. But the older kids were certainly doing this. And I was in the, let's say, 12 or 13, where you're looking at all the goings-on and you're eagerly anticipating.
And we tried our best. We tried to be like those older kids.
And what were the – there was the A&W root beer stand and the shake and something. What was that?
I don't know. Regionally, it was different. There's the Dairy Queens and the Tasty Freezes.
Right. But the ones where you could actually drive the car in, roll the window down, they'd put the tray on the car window. I don't know why that was so fabulous, but it was. It really, really was.
Well, we are enamored with our vehicles. And that
was the period of drive-in movies as well, which
course.
No one does any of those things anymore either.
Okay.
So
that was kind
of historical.
Cool. Yeah, So talk about those kind of cool treats that we enjoy them now.
Fortunately, the food is still available, right?
Right.
So Lana's made a little list here, and we were going to talk about the differences. She's got malts, sodas, shakes, frappes, floats, sundaes, and then I added popsicles, snow cones, things like that. And the differences, probably malt is the one that's least familiar these mm-hmm. days. And the idea is, now I grew up with a father in the dairy business, which means in our kitchen we had a special ice cream freezer, the kind with the door on the top that flops open three ways, and inside were like those 3-gallon containers of Van Chalk straw, as it were, or just, whatever different flavors. So we made a lot of milkshakes at home. The blender had come of age. So it was basically, and we even had, do they do this anymore? It's a milk machine. So it's the bulk thing, which is maybe 3 gallons, and you lift the lever and it shoots out of the spout. We had this in our home kitchen. Right?
Well, for goodness sake.
Yeah, right. I'm not joking when I tell you I'm a milkmaid. So,
okay.
So obviously we made a lot of milkshakes, which was simple. A couple scoops of ice cream, you put the milk in, you turn the blender on. This was pre-smoothies, guys.
Okay.
Smoothies can, you can add fruit too, but we mostly didn't. We just did ice cream and milk. So that's your basic milkshake. Now, if you want it to be a malt is a powder that you buy at the grocery store. It used to be Carnation malted milk or something. Mm-hmm. Comes in a jar. It's still available. I've seen it at the Hy-Vee. And it is, what is it, a malted or roasted barley? It has a slightly toasted, grainy flavor.
Yeah, it's a grain. I think it's roasted barley or toasted barley or something. But that kind of taste, that kind of sweet.
Yeah, it adds a special,
I like that special
flavor. So you just put a scoop of that into your milkshake. Mm-hmm. So chocolate malted or vanilla malted, those were the two kind of. And now I've seen recently recipes for like malted pancakes and things like that. So the malt powder has a nice flavor, and it is a dairy. It has dairy added to it. So mm-hmm. I think it has some powdered milk in it or something like that. So that's what a malt is. And then a frappe is the French word for beaten. So we didn't used to call them frappes. They were just called, malts and shakes.
Right.
And then, of course, there were popsicles, which are used to be completely non-dairy, mostly, orange, grape, that kind of thing.
Kool-Aid.
Yes, kind of like that. And then snow cones, which people still do. In fact, a couple of years I bought one of those little home jobbies for shaving the ice, and I suppose I'll get it out when my grandson comes. Now, the New York version, and I didn't learn about this until I was, 19 or 20 and moved to New York, they make something called an egg cream, which is you take plain soda water and a little syrup, usually vanilla, but you could do chocolate. You add some ice cream, and then you pour a little bit of milk into it. So it's fuzzy, like an ice cream soda, but it's more like a homemade soda.
No egg.
No, there's no eggs in egg cream, but it does have milk in it. Now, lots of things, sodas and floats. We were always big on ice cream sodas. I mean, the other thing that we had in my kitchen growing up, the dairy that my dad worked for, which was the Heath Candy Bar Company, also was the local Pepsi distributor. Right. So we had stacked cases. I don't know how I ever grew up or how I have any teeth left, but we had stacked cases, those wooden cases of Pepsi out there.
Oh, for
so,
God's sake.
You know, you pour out a Pepsi, you flop in a thing of ice cream, and there you got your float.
Ah.
And then there's the classic root beer float.
Now, I am glad root beer is sort of coming back.
Well, it has been back.
And I appreciate. Well, there's some local breweries that are brewing their own root beer. And
right? Does Main Street have a?
Yeah. I recently had a root beer float there, and it was pretty good. So, well, that's something that I consider a treat is a root beer float.
Yeah, and then of course lately. We've gotten Lana's husband used to this is beer floats, which I find are really 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 delicious.
Yeah, you don't need a whole lot. I mean, they're rich.
Oh yeah, especially my favorite has been if you use like a chocolate stout with a chocolate ice cream.
Oh.
This is the adult version, but they really really are yummy. So these are and then of course the last and final thing would be sundaes or. Hot fudge sundaes.
The best invention in the whole world, hot fudge sundaes.
I agree. And you know what? Making your own hot fudge sauce is not that difficult.
Oh, yes.
You just, I put a pan over a pot of boiling water. You don't want the water to touch the bottom of the pan, right?
Right.
So, and then into that you put some chocolate chips. I like dark chocolate, so I like the 60%. And then you just add a little cream and you let it all melt until it's kind of runny enough. And then you can put it right over the ice cream there. And then you can also add some flavors. Like I put sometimes I put a little cardamom in it or a little cinnamon. And, you know, you can fool around with it that way. But once you've warmed it up and mixed it up, then you can store the excess in the refrigerator for the next time you want to warm it up in a jar is easier. Or you can use a microwave, which I don't, but you can. It also, once it hardens, you've actually got fudge, more or less. So the most wonderful thing, I think, is a hot fudge sundae.
There's something about the hot and the cold together and how the ice cream kind of makes the fudge crunchy.
Well, we're also running into blueberry season. It's very easy to make a blueberry sauce. You know, you just slightly cook them with a little bit of sugar. You could add a tiny bit of water, but not too much because their berries will juice out. I mean, it is ice cream time now.
It is. Another reminder of summer, the cicadas are back. I've actually heard some. And speaking of bugs, we love them. We love bugs. We do. But they can be annoying. And Donna, you found a natural bug repellent.
Homemade bug spray recipe. Backed by science, it says. I'll read you the ingredients because it says tea tree oil. Tea tree oil actually kills ticks. So you want to put that in. We do have Lyme's disease around here. We don't have it, thank heavens, nearly as bad as many other places like north of us and certainly New England.
And as someone told me that the Lyme's disease ticks are not the ones that you normally see. The Lyme's disease ticks are very, very tiny. So you can't see them, but there's different kinds of ticks.
It's difficult. But anyway, so apparently tea tree oil kills the ticks. So use that. And then it says lemon eucalyptus. It says this one has a strong tick repellent property comparable to DEET.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty good, right? And these are non-toxic. So, you know, especially for children, you might want to do this. Then you add in citronella, which I'm a big citronella fan. I don't go anywhere on a summer evening without it. I call it, I'm wearing my citronella perfume. So citronella is a repellent for mosquitoes specifically. And then they also include lavender and geranium, which repel ticks. It's not as strong as eucalyptus, but you put a little into it, then you don't smell like a tiki torch. So it says, the recipe is 1/4 cup of water, 1/4 cup of witch hazel, 10 drops of the lemon eucalyptus essential oil, 10 drops of citronella essential oil, 10 drops of tea tree essential oil, and then 5 drops of the geranium essential oil, and 5 drops of lavender essential oil. So you combine them all in a dark glass spray bottle.
Dark glass.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, one of the brown bottles. And then you have to shake it every time before you use it. Now that is a lot of essential oil. However, essential oils do, you know, you can make a bottle up and use it all. And even by next summer, those essential oils, if you have more left over, it will be sitting there in your homemade first aid department. Mm-hmm. And they keep very well.
Very good. Now, this is the sort of thing that I bet we could get Donna to put on the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage.
Oh, you want the recipe. Okay.
The recipe, yes.
Okay, we can do that. We can do that.
Because not only are you hearing us with your ears, but you can go to the khoifm.org website and find the talk section, find the Donna Lana Kitchen there. And not only do we have past shows and you can listen to any of them, but there is a recipe page, and this would be a good addition.
Yeah, it would. And, you know, something about essential oils, for those of you who are not too familiar with them, we have a company in Iowa called Frontier Natural Products or something. It's an herb company, mm-hmm. and they have a line of essential oils. The brand name is Auracacia, and this is an Iowa product. Mm-hmm. So I know you can get it at Wheatsfield. Where else do you think you could find them around town? I mean, certainly you can order them online, but these are good things to keep around because I always keep tea tree oil because it's antibiotic, antifungal.
It kind of stinks, but it's worth it.
Yeah, it does. And you know what? It's such an important herbal medicinal that you learn to like it.
There. Yes.
So there's for them darn bugs.
Them darn bugs, and you can make it by yourself.
And it is non-toxic.
Yes. So you can go to khoifm.org, find archives, find recipes, or if you'd like to contact us, khoiradio@gmail.com, let us know what's on your plate. We'd like to know what you have in mind. KHOI. This is Community Radio, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thank you. Welcome, this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Welcome back. We're talking about the best of Iowa summer, all those nice summer memories of ice cream and driving around with the windows open and harvesting good things from the garden. So summer.
And eating lots of ice cream.
Yeah, yes. There's county fairs are coming up. There's fireflies. Sweet corn is just around the corner.
Oh, I've seen some. The stand that's on, where is it, 13th and Grand, the Grimes corn. They're not there every day, but they're there sometimes.
So here it is. Yep, it's summer in Iowa.
That's an important time marker when the corn shows up.
Right. So did you ever wonder about the difference between zucchini and summer squash? It's not the kind of thing I stay awake at night over, but did you ever wonder, Donna?
No, I didn't wonder because I know the difference.
Oh, see, there you go.
Sorry, Donna the know-it-all.
Donna knows it all.
Yeah.
Go ahead, tell us the difference.
Well, summer squash are as opposed to winter squash, mm-hmm. right? So the winter squash are the pumpkins, the hard ones, mm-hmm. right? The soft ones that come now mm-hmm. are, you know, patty pan, zucchini, different colors, the yellow one, mm-hmm. crookneck, the soft ones are the summer squash.
Right.
You got it. So zucchini is a subset of?
It is.
Summer squash.
Zucchini is the subset of summer squash. And although there's many, many different varieties, if you let things called summer squash mature, they're the ones that get rather hard, and they will kind of turn into sort of wintery squashes. Maybe not as well enjoyed as a winter squash, but
yeah,
they get
you
hard.
Don't really want your zucchini to. In fact, I would like to say loud and clear that a zucchini, and most summer squash, but particularly zucchini, is best picked quite small.
Mm-hmm.
Quite small. I mean, a zucchini that's like no bigger than your finger, if you have about five per person, is an incredible delicacy. Mm-hmm. Now, by the time it gets to be the size of your forearm, you've blown it.
Yeah.
Right.
So
the smaller the better. And to all you gardeners, I would encourage you to pick them as soon as you spot them out there. And really, really, then when they're small, just a light saute with salt and pepper and maybe chop in a little basil, they are sublime that way.
Yes. I like the things this time of year. It's really good. There are,
they're often called baby squash, but in my mind, that's the best time to pick them.
Yeah. The English word squash derives from a Narragansett, a Native American language word. That is Askutata squash, which translates to a green thing eaten raw.
Oh, right. When they're small, they're delicious raw, too, like just on a crudités mm-hmm. plate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very good.
The diminutive is charming.
Yes. Squash is a New World American sort of gift to the world. It's one of those things that actually migrated back to Europe.
Along with the tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there are four genuses of squash: Maxima, Mixta, Moscata, and Pepo. Pepo. Zucchini is in the Pepo, and cucumbers are in that too. Pepo. That's what it comes from. And zucchini is the thing that we call zucchini is a relatively new sort of thing, because when all this squash came from the New World, went back to Europe, the Italians grabbed onto this thing. Oh, what a wonderful invention, they said. And they started growing it. And they bred for this soft thing. And they gave it the name zucchini, the long green thing. It is an Italian thing.
Well, and there are lots of Italian varieties. Like there are some that have more ridges on them. And I actually, not that I grow a lot of things. I'm not the gardener. That's Lana. But over the years, I have, of course, grown squash because any fool can do it. And I tend to pick the varieties. Some have actually more flavor than others.
Oh, yes,
I mean,
do.
My, you know, zucchini can be my least favorite vegetable because it's often very, it's grown too large. It can become very watery and fairly flavorless. So I tend to prefer the breeds that are, like I'm growing one this year that's my favorite. It's called Tromboncino because it grows, it's rather curvaceous and it's light green. And in fact, I've been told that it is more in the butternut squash family for some reason.
Well, it does.
It's very smooth skinned.
Yeah. And it has a little lump on the end like butternut squash.
Yes. But like all of the zucchinis, you know, it vines up and I'm training mine up the fence, so I'll be sure to spot them. But pick them small. And there are other dark zucchinis with fluted edges that are very pretty in the pan. And then, of course, there's all the patty pans, the yellow ones, the, you know, and you kind of treat them all the same.
Right. I really have become fond of the patty pans because
they're cute, aren't they?
They're the little scalloped edge, roundish sort of things. They are more of a true summer squash because they can get bigger and they turn into a pumpkinish kind of squash later if you.
Right. And like the zucchinis, they're really good small.
They're good small. And
they come in yellow and green.
Yeah. Different colors.
Different colors.
And they, as far as I'm concerned, they are a little less watery. There's a lot of meat to them. I enjoy
them. And they're really pretty in the dish.
Yeah.
Now, zucchini always makes me think of this classic French Provençal dish, but it's made all over France now, called ratatouille. Now, this is not the Disney movie about a rat, okay? It's a classic French dish. That, and I did see eggplant at the market this week. Somebody has a hoop house, so we've got early eggplant. So the classic French ratatouille is you actually cook each vegetable separately. So it's onions, a little garlic, and then it's eggplant, zucchini, and tomatoes, right? So you roast the eggplant and the zucchini and the onions. Preferably, I mean, classically, they just sautéed them one at a time and then layered them on with the real tomatoes, you know, that you've skinned and seeded and diced. And it involves a lot of oil and a lot of slow cooking, and it can be served hot or cold, kind of like a condiment. But now the fast and quick way of doing it, of course, is to just throw them all in the pot, use a bunch of canned tomatoes, and it's a lovely summer dish. And remember to serve it hot or cold.
Good use for all those wonderful summer vegetables. Ratatouille. I didn't even know how to spell it. I was trying to write it down here. RATATOUILLE.
And I'm sure Disney named their movie that because it's such a fun word. Don't children like ratatouille?
It's a
ratatouille.
Ratatouille. It's a lovely name.
So, you know, just get those zucchinis little and you can roast them. You can saute them. You can even just throw them in with a can of tomatoes and some fresh basil.
Yes. I'm looking forward to some Tromboncino squash, too. They are,
Oh, you can make soup, too.
Yes, soup.
Yeah, a classic French is to lightly steam them with some chicken broth and put them into the blender with a little salt and pepper and a dab of cream or yogurt. You know, the cream is the classical French. Just blend it up, and you can serve it even chilled.
Yum. Oh, yeah, chilled summer soups in the sea. Are we talking summer or what?
Yeah, when you reach the point, I mean, I'm not, by the time you have to grate them up and make zucchini bread, it's like, no.
Nah, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, what's the point? You don't taste the zucchini. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's just a way of getting rid of overgrown zucchini, so don't overgrow them!
No, except chickens always like overgrown zucchini.
Well, so are you growing your garden to feed your chickens?
Well, no, but they make use of everything.
Yeah, right, for accidents. So okay. Keep your eye on those squash plants and harvest them young.
Yes, yes. I have a little note here. I would like to do a shout-out to Paul Hertz, who is one of the hosts here of a radio show called Ready, Aims, Fire. He does some other things around
and
here,
he plays
too.
The trombone.
And he plays the trombone.
He's in the parade trying to lead our little children's Pots and Pans band to get them to hit the pans at the same time.
It was a brave effort,
I tell you. It was
he
adorable.
He did a great job. And I want to mention, since we're talking about trombocino squash, Paul Hertz on his last show of Ready, Aims, Fire did a tribute to the tune 76 Trombones, and he played the tune in all its variations, 76 Trombones, for 76 minutes, and in every kind of men's choirs. There was
it's a well-recorded song.
And, yeah, and it was, and by the end of it, you're singing along. It's a good thing. There was even, as I recall, a discussion of 76 Trombones by two Dutch comedians. I didn't understand a thing they were saying, but it was funny anyway. It was good. Yeah.
Well, the Music Man is a very Iowa thing.
Very Iowa thing. And we like our trombones. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Well, today we've talked about the new moon. We've talked about garlic and
mosquitoes,
barn swallows, diving, and successful fledglings. Donna gave us a bug repellent recipe, which will be on the Donna Lana Kitchen website.
By the way, since we're about ratatouille, here comes the French. The French word for mosquito is moustique.
All right.
In case you need to know about moustiques.
All right. That's good. Okay, get your moustique on and have some ratatouille and all that kind of stuff. So, this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You've been listening to this fine community radio station, and if you wish to support this radio station, go to khoifm.org and find out more about us. We've had music today from a compilation called Malt Shop Memories, just to get us thinking about summer. Summer, yes. We'll go out with the tune, Let the Good Times Roll. Join us Tuesdays at noon. We repeat at 7 p.m. Anytime. You can go to khoafm.org. Things are streamed and downloaded and all that kind of stuff. So, my name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had fine engineering, as usual, by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.